Welcome to the program Old Testament Prophets with Father Mitch Pacwa.
Shalom, shalom aleichem. The peace of God be with you. My name is Father Mitch Pacwa. I'm a Jesuit priest and I teach at Loyola University in Chicago. And we're about to tie up the final stage of Isaiah's career as a prophet. But we're going to see a different kind of literature at this final stage than what we've seen so far. Because so far, we've looked at oracles, that is, prophecies by Isaiah, whereas now we are going to take a look at stories about Isaiah and King Hezekiah of Judah. So it's not going to be so much oracles we'll look at, but we'll take a look instead at stories. Now, we have a number of sources to deal with here, and this is where we get everything ganz meshuganen, that is, all crazy mixed up. All right, you know the word meshuggah? It means crazy mixed up. We have lots of problems here. First of all, we have to deal with three different biblical versions of these events of 701 B.C. We have to deal with the first one, which comes from the second book of Kings. And if you take a quick look and open up at 2 Kings, chapter 18, verse 13. This begins the story of the invasion of Judah by King Sennacherib. Then we have another version of it in Isaiah chapters 36 and 37. That's the second version. And it's pretty much based on what we see here in the second book of Kings, chapter 18. But the reason that we believe that 2 Kings 18 is earlier is because 2 Kings 18 has longer passages. Some parts of it contain more evidence, more data, than what we find in Isaiah. So, the Isaiah section was copied from the second book of Kings. Okay, now, they had no problem with copyrights. They didn't have those laws then, so they just took it up. That means this, though, that since we are pretty positive that the second book of Kings was written sometime after the year 620, all right, that means that this version about the story of Isaiah comes about 80 years, maybe even more, maybe 90 years, or even 100 years after these events are all over. Therefore, the part that we have in Isaiah is added to the book of Isaiah even later, sometime after the year 600. So we have a long span of time to deal with in terms of the growth of this material. Then there's one other version of this, and that's in the book of Chronicles. And the book of Chronicles, chapter 32, I believe it is, yes, chapter 32 tells the same story, and this is even later yet. That the story in Chronicles is based on what we find in the book of Isaiah. Mentions, you know, is this not written in the book of the scroll of Isaiah? So it was already there. But the Chronicles was not written until sometime after the year 530. All right, so each of these is about 100 years apart, or even more than 100 years apart, in terms of their being written down. So we have to try to keep in balance all these different things. And, you know, something that my Hebrew teacher one time said to me, she is herself an Israeli. She taught me modern Hebrew. And she said, wherever you have two Jews, you have three political parties. All right? That's a saying in Israel to this day. And so here we find that, you know, we don't always get the same amount of information in these three biblical stories. And we just have to realize that's the way things are. Then we have other sources. We also have a record by King Sennacherib of Assyria. And as a matter of fact, I've got a picture of his record of it. And in this picture of what King Sennacherib has said, we see that it's a sort of a cylinder, okay, because they wrote in clay. They couldn't really write on books so easily. And on this cylinder is writing in Assyrian, and this writing says that I, Sennacherib, had locked up Hezekiah, the king of Judah, like a bird in a cage in his city of Jerusalem. And I have captured 46 of his cities, and I took 200,100 some people captive. Okay? So that's his record, and that's a fourth version of all this. Now, besides King Sennacherib's record, we also have some Babylonian records and some Egyptian records to take a look at. Now, let's try to put some of this information together and make sense out of it all, okay? Open up, because we're dealing with the book of Isaiah, let's take a look, first of all, at the book of Isaiah, chapter 36, to see what he has here for us. It starts off, in the 14th year of King Hezekiah, Sennacherib, king of Assyria, went on an expedition against all the fortified cities of Judah, and he captured them. Okay? Now, this puts it in the year 701, because Hezekiah became the king of Judah in the year 715, right? The 14th year means 701. That fits what King Sennacherib says in his records as well. Okay? And it also fits King Sennacherib's records, because Sennacherib said, I took 46 cities of Judah. And the Bible admits that he took all the fortified cities. Now, it says in verse 2, from Lachish, the king of Assyria, sent his commander with a great army to King Hezekiah in Jerusalem. Now, what's Lachish? Lachish was an important city in Judah, the second most important city of Judah. And I also have some slides of this. I'd like to show you some more pictures that I've been given permission to show you from the Biblical Archaeology Review, which is a great magazine. I recommend you all get it. It's just terrific in terms of understanding about the Bible. And in this magazine, I have some pictures that we bring to you here now of Lachish. Now, the first of these pictures is a picture of the mound of Lachish, the way it looks today. You can see that it's got sides and a flat top. The reason it has that is because the ancient city of Lachish is underneath. They kept building one on top of another near a local spring. And what you see on the top of this mound are the uncovering of part of the city by archaeologists. Okay? Now, in the next slide that I have, this is a map of Lachish. And you see in the center is a fort, and then in the back of the upper part of your picture, you have what was a temple that was in the city of Lachish. And where you see that it was yellow, that is where the main fighting took place. That the Judeans built another ramp over there, right next to the main gate. And the Assyrians attacked right there, and they made a ramp against the city of Lachish. Now, in the next picture that I have, you see a picture of Sennacherib. Now, his face has been knocked off a bit. Somebody didn't like the way he looked, so they chipped off his face. But the body you see seated is King Sennacherib, and he has two men behind him who are eunuchs. That's why they have no beards. They've been castrated, so they can't have beards anymore. And then the man with the beard in front of him is somebody from Lachish bringing him presents and surrendering the city to King Sennacherib. Now, the next slide that I have shows the city of Lachish. This is one of the towers of Lachish. And there are Judean soldiers on top of the tower, and the Assyrians are attacking from below. In the next slide, you see the same tower from below, that there's a battering ram that is sort of covered up. You see the large pole going up against the tower? That's an Assyrian battering ram. And what you see flying in the air are spears and chunks of stone that are being slung against the city. Now, the next slide shows you an Assyrian eunuch shooting an arrow, and behind him are two Assyrians slinging stones. That's why their arms are back, they're going to sling stones at the city walls. And in the next slide, you see a close-up of the slingers that these men have in their hands up above, ropes with slingshots, and they're going to shoot rocks at the people in the city of Lachish. In the next slide, what we see is an Assyrian, and he's got the head of a Judean in his hands. He got him by the hair. The Assyrians used to love to cut off heads of other people and take them home for souvenirs. Everybody likes souvenirs. They didn't have Mickey Mouse, so they took home heads of people to show the wife and kids. Now, these slides that I've shown you, you know, indicate the kind of battle that the kings of Nekrib fought against Lachish. And all of these different slides that I've just shown you are from King Sennacherib's palace. He had this inside of his palace walls to remind him of the great battles that he won at Lachish. And it's from Lachish that he sent messages to King Hezekiah. We've been showing you some of King Sennacherib's family photos. Well, it took a long time to develop his pictures because he had to carve them in the rock of the wall of his palace. Okay, but besides, you know, King Sennacherib attacking 46 cities, including Lachish, down in Judah, we also know that King Hezekiah prepared for all this, and he did carving of his own. And I'd like to show you one more slide, and this is a picture of a water tunnel that King Hezekiah dug inside Jerusalem. This was 1,800 feet long. You can see that it's a tunnel right cut through the rock, and then there are steps going up from there. The water brought water from outside the city of Jerusalem into the city. And Hezekiah had this cut in over 1,800 feet long. They started at two different ends, and the workmen met in the middle so that water could be brought to the city of Jerusalem when King Sennacherib attacked the city. So that was Hezekiah's preparation for the attack of Jerusalem by King Sennacherib. Okay? But now let's see what else happened after that. That from the city of Lachish, that city that we showed you from Sennacherib's family album, that King Sennacherib sent a messenger, and his name was Rabshakeh. And as a matter of fact, there's an Assyrian record of this guy, an Assyrian, his name is Rabsaku, but it's the same character, no doubt, who's an official. And he goes with an army from Lachish to Jerusalem. And he goes to Jerusalem, and he's met by three people. Eliakim, the son of Hilkiah, Shebna, the scribe, and Joach, who is the what they call the recorder. Okay, he's sort of like the secretary. All right. Now, we've seen two of these guys before. Eliakim and Shebna both occurred in chapter 22. But in chapter 22 of Isaiah, Shebna was in charge of the king's household in the year 711. Okay? And Hilkiah was another official. And so what happens is that in chapter 22, which was written by Isaiah around the year 711, Isaiah told the prophecy saying, Shebna does not deserve to be in charge of the household of the king, but instead Eliakim, the son of Hilkiah, deserves to be the head of the household. And sure enough, King Hezekiah listened to the prophet Isaiah and switched roles, so that now Eliakim, the son of Hilkiah, is the head of the household, and Shebna is just a scribe. Okay? So these two officials, plus another guy named Joach, the son of Asaph, go and they meet the messenger from King Sennacherib. And this messenger says, "Tell King Hezekiah, thus says the great king, the king of Assyria." So this is the way you start off a message. And notice how he starts it off. "Thus says the great king, the king of Assyria." Is that not the same way that prophecies begin? And remember what I said a long time ago, that because Yahweh is the real king of Israel, he uses the same form of speech that human kings use. "Thus says Yahweh." Well, the king of Assyria uses that form of speech. "Thus says the great king, the king of Assyria." And his message is, On what do you base your confidence? Do you think that mere words are enough for strategy and power in war? On whom do you rely, on whom do you trust that you rebel against me, Hezekiah? This Egypt, this reed on which you rely and what you trust, is in fact a broken reed that pierces the hand of anybody who leans on it. In other words, King Sennacherib is saying to Hezekiah, boy, are you stupid for trusting in yourself to rebel against me, the great king, and is even stupider for trusting in the king of Egypt. Shabako is his name. For you say to me, well, we rely on Yahweh, our God. And then this messenger from King Sennacherib says, well, is not this God the one whose high places and altars Hezekiah removed and commanding Judah and Jerusalem to worship only at this one altar? As a matter of fact, Hezekiah did that. He had destroyed all the altars of Yahweh and the altars of Baal and Ashtaroth and all the other gods and goddesses. All the altars around the country of Judah and Israel, Hezekiah destroyed. Because he wanted the people to worship only at Jerusalem, the one place where he could worship. And because that way he could have control over the orthodoxy of the worship of the people, to make sure they worshiped correctly. And so now, this messenger from King Sennacherib says to Hezekiah, why are you going to trust Yahweh? You destroyed his altars. And the reason Rabshakeh, the messenger, says that is he did not understand why Hezekiah destroyed those altars. He didn't realize that he did it because of faith in Yahweh. So he thinks that Hezekiah made a mistake. We're taking a look at Isaiah 36. And the invasion of Judah by King Sennacherib. And here, the messenger from King Sennacherib, the king of Assyria, now says to the messengers from King Hezekiah of Jerusalem, I hope you're following all these names, because you need a scorecard practically to keep them all straight. But this messenger says to the representatives of Hezekiah, said, look, I'm going to make a bet with you guys. And the bet is this. I will give you 2,000 horses if you can put riders on them. In other words, he says, I'll give you 2,000 horses if you have 2,000 men who can even ride it. Because by this point, almost all the cities of Judah have been destroyed, and the army of Hezekiah has been made very, very small. The only city he has left is Jerusalem. That's all. Everything else is wiped out. So he says, if you've got 2,000 soldiers who can ride a horse, I'll give you the horses. So he's showing off. That's what the king Sennacherib is doing. And he goes on to say, how can you turn back even one of the least of my captains? And yet you rely on Egypt for chariots and horsemen. Was it without Yahweh's will that I came up to destroy this land? Yahweh said to me, go up and destroy that land. Now, as a matter of fact, did not Isaiah say back in chapter 10 that the Assyrians are sent by the Lord? The Lord's going to whistle for them real loud. I wish I could whistle with my fingers like that, but I can't. But he's going to whistle. The Lord knows how to do that. And the Assyrians will come running. So King Sennacherib even has a sense that Yahweh sent him to punish Jerusalem and Judah. And so he says, how can you stop me, Hezekiah? The Lord sent me to do this. Now, the officials who represent King Hezekiah, when they speak to the official representing Sennacherib, say to this guy, and here's the scene. They're outside the gates of Jerusalem. The representative of King Hezekiah is on top of the city wall. And the representative of King Sennacherib is outside the gate yelling up at the people, on top of the gate. Okay, that's the scene. Here's what he says. Hey, Rabshakeh, please, would you speak in Aramaic? We understand it. Don't speak to us in Judean dialect so that the people who are on the wall can hear it. Okay? Now, the reason is this. Aramaic was the international language of this time. Everybody spoke in Aramaic, just like today. Everybody speaks English. You go every place in the world, it's easy to find someone who speaks English. That's the international language. They love to watch Dallas and all that stuff. They all watch English. They all know some English. I was in the Amazon jungle one time back in 75, and some kid walked up to me and said, "Hello, Joe, how are you?" They know some English. Everybody knows English. Well, that's where Aramaic used to be at this time. And Rabshakeh, who is the commander and the messenger from King Sennacherib, says, "Hey, I didn't come to talk to you and to your master, King Hezekiah. That's not why I was sent here. I came to talk to those people up there on the wall because I have a message for them, because they are going to eat their own excrement and they are going to drink their own urine. Now, that is not a tasty dish. But anyway, can you imagine the smell in the kitchen when they're cooking their own excrement and serving up their own urine as a sauce? Okay? Yucko! But he says that's what they're going to be eating, because King Sennacherib is going to surround the city of Jerusalem, and you're not going to have any food to eat except your own excrement. You're not going to have any water except your own urine." Okay? It's like we all say in Chicago, don't eat the yellow snow. It's not good for you. So, here, he came forward and he started yelling to the people on the wall. And he said, "Listen to the words of the great king, the king of Assyria, all you sit up on the wall. Don't let Hezekiah trick you people, because he can't help you, he can't save you. And don't let Hezekiah trick you into trusting in Yahweh, saying Yahweh will surely save us. Don't you listen, because the king of Assyria says, make peace with me and surrender." So this messenger from Sennacherib is saying to the people on the wall, make peace with the king of Assyria and surrender. Then you can all go home. You can eat from your own fig trees, drink of your own vines, drink your own water. You have everything you want until I come over. Then I'm going to take you captive. But when I take you captive, I'll give you an offer you can't refuse. Namely, I'll bring you to my country, and you have a nice place to live. Okay, you'll love it over there. Great time. And besides that, what happened to the gods of the other countries? King Sennacherib had just taken a whole series of cities. Lots of cities. He mentioned some of them here. Hamat, Arpad, Sepharvayim, Samaria. Said, hey, those people had gods too. Those gods didn't do diddly-do for them. And your God, Yahweh, isn't going to help you either. So you just give up and we'll take care of you. Now that's the message from Sennacherib. But the people on the wall don't say a word. They don't respond at all, because the king had commanded them, don't say anything. And the representatives of King Hezekiah go back to his palace. They tear their garments. They pull them apart as a sign of mourning, saying, "Well, you vault this mirror. We've got a problem over here. You wouldn't believe King Hezekiah. They're going to take the whole place." And so, Hezekiah sends these same guys, Eliakim especially, to the temple, to the prophet Isaiah, and some priests with him. And they give a message to Isaiah, the prophet, and says, look, this is a day of distress, it's a day of punishment, and it's a day of disgrace. And the children are about to be born, but there's not enough strength to bring them forth. In other words, we can't deal with the situation, Isaiah. Pray for us. Pray for us. And so the prophet Isaiah says, tell this to your master, to Hezekiah. Thus says Yahweh, don't be frightened by the words you have heard, with which the servants of the king of Assyria has blasphemed me. I'm about to put him in such a spirit that when he hears a certain report, he will return to his own land, and there I will cause him to fall by the sword. And as a matter of fact, that did happen. That the king had to return back to Assyria. The king Sennacherib, that is. And even though he did surround the city of Jerusalem, he had to leave eventually. So the word of the Lord was true. And all the boasting of the Assyrians meant nothing at all, because you can't boast before God. You must humble yourself before Him, because He will deliver. God bless you.